Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off.
So today I'm doing a website teardown on arcade-king.com, which was volunteered by one of our group members, Jamie. Jamie, if you're watching in, you might be watching in. Thank you very much for volunteering your site. It's always nice to have people volunteer their site for these sort of things. And of course, if you would like to me to jump on and run through your site in one of these sessions, or sometimes I even do things like Google Ads accounts or any other aspect of your business, I'm more than happy to. You can just send me a message, send me a DM here in Facebook where you're watching this, or of course you can email me at support@dropshipbreakthrough.com. You can go to dropshipbreakthrough.com and you'll find contact details there as well. I'm always happy to do these. You know, we do these, try to get on and do these every week. So the website teardowns are cool, I guess, because it gives an opportunity for people to learn more just about some of the nuances around high ticket dropshipping websites, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. And it's always a little bit easier. You can talk about those things kind of in the abstract, of course, but it's always easier to talk about these sort of things with an actual example. I think it's good. So thank you, Jamie. All right. So basically how this is going to work, or how these work, if you haven't caught one before, I've done quite a few in this group now, is I'm just literally going to be on the site that you see on the screen. I'm going to run through it, starting at the homepage, and I'm just basically going to go down the pages. I'm going to look at the homepage, look at a collection page, or look at product page, might look at some of the other pages on the site. And I'm just going to call it as I see it. I haven't spent a lot of time looking at this site. So this is kind of like a reaction as well, if you like a reaction video. And I'm just going to kind of call it out in a fairly unprepared way, tell you what I see, what I would do differently, what I think's great, what I think's not so great, what could be worked on. We'll see where that takes us. So starting at the homepage here, and I'm probably actually going to say for this one, I'm going to talk a little bit about the niche as well as it relates to the website, because I think this is one of the things that kind of does jump out at me a little bit immediately on landing on the page. So Arcade King, we can see, is selling a range of arcade-related machines. We've got arcade machines of various sorts. We've got claw machines, things like air hockey tables, pool tables, foosball tables, snack machines. They've even got some popcorn machines. And if anybody knows anything about me, you will know that I sell some of these things as well. So I actually have direct experience selling some of these types of products in Australia, not the US. This is a US-based website. I, of course, sell some of these sort of things in Australia. So I could probably have some insights there. So the first thing, well, a couple of things that jumps to mind, and we're going to start right at the very start. Arcade-King. So you can't see it on the screen, but the URL, it should be in the comments for this video, is arcade-king.com. And I would assume that Jamie went with that because he couldn't get arcadeking.com with the Arcade King all as one term, like the name kind of thing. I Googled it quickly, and it's for sale for about $3,500, I think, through GoDaddy. So I would assume that's the reason. However, I don't like the dash. The reason I don't like the dash is because customers don't remember the dash, or it's harder for customers to remember the dash. And so when you're selling high-ticket products and you're doing high-ticket dropshipping, and that's what this group's all about, so that's all I'm talking about. We're not going to waste time with low-ticket dropshipping here. You're building a brand, right? So yes, you're selling other people's products, other brands' products, but you're actually over time building your own brand. Arcade King is now a brand. And so one of the things about building a brand, and there are various ways that you can leverage that down the track, it's not such an important thing right at the beginning of your business, but over time it becomes more and more important. One of the important things about building a brand is people being able to recall that brand. And if you're an online brand, people being able to recall how to find your brand and being able to do that very easily is important. So the first thing that people are going to do, if they remember the name Arcade King and they want to get back to your website and that, you know, they haven't seen a retargeting ad or they didn't bookmark your page or something, is they're going to go to Google and they're going to type in arcadeking.com because that's what everybody assumes your URL will be. I do that all the time. You know, if I remember the name of a business and I'm like, sometimes I'll go and look at Google search results. But usually I'll just go and I'll type in whatever their name is, .com.au, and see if something comes up, or .com or whatever, based on which country I'm in. And so, you know, it might feel like a small thing now, and it probably is, but I would try and avoid that. Now, in this case, you know, the branding's done and all that sort of thing, so it might not make sense to go back and change it. But do keep in mind, if you ever need to change your URL for any reason, at the start of your business is the time to do it. Don't leave it 12 months, 13 months, 14 months, because changing your domain name can have some impacts on your search engine optimization efforts. You know, temporarily, yes, but you know, it can be a bit more of a hassle to do it down the track than right at the beginning. Because of course, if you have to create lots of redirects, it can break links, all of that sort of thing. If you've been getting tons of value from the podcast and you want to learn more about high ticket dropshipping and interact with a fantastic community of high ticket dropshippers, we've got a free Facebook group that you can join right now today. So if you head over to Facebook and search for Dropship Breakthrough, you'll see a Facebook come up that has on the end of it, High Ticket Dropshipping Mastery for New Entrepreneurs. Hit the join button, you'll get into the group. We do group only trainings in there, and there's thousands of other people who are going through the high ticket dropshipping journey that you can look for support from, ask questions, and find out if high ticket dropshipping is for you. So that's something I'd say. Now, jumping onto the homepage, let's get down into it. First thing that jumps out at me, if anybody knows my preferences, I hate the color red. So this actually hurts my eyes a little bit, this red right here. I don't like it. It's just too, it's distracting, it's really distracting me. All I can see is red at the moment. Now I get the color scheme, and this is where I think there's a little bit of, for me, there's a little bit of confusion here. So I get the bright color scheme and the image here and that sort of thing could be aimed at a B2C customer. So this niche can be either B2C or B2B or both. It can be a bit of both, right? So if we look at the machines that are on here so far, claw machines, snack machines, and things like redemption machines, boxer machines, and even not so much the table games, some of these machines are very specifically B2B products, as in a business is going to buy those and put those in an arcade that customers are going to come and play those things. So the customer for that is the person that owns the arcade, or they might own a series of them. Or as I found in my time selling some of these sort of products, actually a lot of other businesses buy them as well. So it's not just arcade businesses. It's just like any business, lots of businesses that deal with children, like they'll have games rooms for children, camps, you know, there's a whole range, but then also professional organizations will buy some of these things to put them in their, you know, break rooms and stuff like that. And their staff can play them while they're having a break, like adult staff, that is. And so there's actually a much wider range of businesses out there that buy some of these products than you would think at first glance, particularly these days. I think it's becoming more common. And so you really, whenever you're faced with this decision, right, you kind of have to think a little bit carefully about this. You're thinking about who am I trying to serve here? Am I trying to serve the retail customer? And the retail customer in this case is primarily male, although there is a reasonable chunk of women who buy the products as a gift, but not so many buy it for themselves. But so it's primarily male. It's gonna be somebody who's setting up a games room in their house, a man cave, something like that, right? That sort of thing. right? That's one customer or a series of customers there. The B2B side is different. It's very different, right? You're dealing with people who are, their interest is not the same, right? They're buying these products to make money from them. That's really the outcome, you know? And so those two, to me, those two are very different. And you, yes, you can serve both on the same website, or you could also choose to focus on one or the other as well. Now, you'll probably find most of the market out there, I would think, focuses more on the dude at home, man cave, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of machines that kind of are tailored towards that. I would say there's probably less action on the B2B front. I'm sure there's some, but there's probably less. So to me, that's the first question. So when I look at this website, the first thing that jumps into my mind is kind of that it's designed more for the customer, the B2C customer, like from a design perspective, the bright colors, the neons, etc. Honestly, like this is not, you don't do that when you're trying to target businesses. Even for this niche where some of the people buying these things are going to run an arcade themselves. Yeah, those can be flashy lights and stuff, but that's not necessarily who that person is. Somebody who runs arcades isn't necessarily passionate about arcades, right? You have to remember this in business. A lot of people who run businesses are in it for the business, right? They see an opportunity, they invest into things, they own things. It's like somebody who runs a coin-operated laundry, which can be a fantastic, reasonably passive little business in some areas, right? That person's not passionate about doing your laundry. They're passionate about making money in a fairly passive sense as an investment. So you don't, if you're targeting that person, you don't design your website to appeal to the user of the products, right? So this design kind of jumps out to me and says, I'm trying to target the user of the products. So that's not going to be the person buying them in most cases on the B2B side. On the B2C side, it is. But the problem then is if you're targeting the B2C side, you don't really have B2C products on here. There are some like pool tables, foosball tables. Yes, people will buy those, put them in their home. Air hockey tables, in my experience, I've sold them for a while, very rarely. Do they get into people's homes? Some, yes, once again. Claw machines, no. Snack machines, once again, almost no. Redemption machines, boxing machines, no. Right, they're B2B only, pretty much. Some of these video arcade machines, if we go in here, like these two sort of tabletop machines, you might call them. These are very popular for people's homes. So I sell a ton of these sort of things to people, putting them in their home, man cave, etc. Similarly, some of the upright machines as well can be very popular for the B2C side. But so you kind of have to think about that. Now, if I thought I wanted to go after both, both B2C and B2B, I would lean my design towards the B2B customer, right? And that's going to be a toned down design. Like from a color perspective, it's just going to feel like bright. Making your site look like a Christmas tree isn't professional. It doesn't feel professional. And so, you know, if somebody's setting up an arcade machine, and they're going to spend like $100,000. You know, a lot of people, or they're from a professional organization who's buying this sort of stuff for their employees. What they're looking for is somebody who they think is going to be operating on their level, right? And so to me, I would be toning down the design a lot here, and I would be going more for designing it a bit more towards the B2C side, because that's still going to work for the B2B side. That's still going to work for the B2C side. So this is the thing. Whereas if you go the other way, it doesn't work both ways as well. All right. So, have a think about that. I would be having a think about that. I don't like the logo necessarily. At this size, it's very hard to read. So this is on a desktop, of course, that I'm looking at here. This is very hard to read. And this little, mascot-y type thing here, like, I'm going to be honest, I can't tell what that is. And I'm taking up half of a 49-inch screen with this window nearly. Oh, no, sorry, less than half. About between a third and a half. And so this looks really small. And once again, the branding to me is kind of like the B2C side a little bit, like that. And like, I get that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but what I sense at this point is a mismatch between the products and the ideal customer. So if your ideal customer is the B2C side, I would be filling this side up with more B2C focused products, which tend to be the smaller options, right? The smaller options of everything, the smaller pool tables, the smaller, less expensive foosball tables, you know, more tabletop type arcade machines or more upright arcade machines. Now, honestly, if I was doing this, that wouldn't be the direction I would go in. I would personally be trying to go more heavily for the B2B side. I love B2B more. With these products, I love B2B more as well. I think they're just easier sales. You can sell more of them. Not in necessarily an individual order volume size, but like as in you can do bigger orders. So like I've, you know, done orders, B2B orders. I've only been selling these things for like 8 months or so. I've done B2B orders like 25,000 plus because they bought multiple machines and things like that. And so that's obviously a really nice day. So moving along from there, and then I would change the hero image. Like I like having a hero image on sites. To me, a homepage, this is not where the majority of your traffic is going to land the first time. You're going to land probably on product pages when your business is new and that sort of thing. But like if I was going to get an image here, I would try and find an image that was, say, if I was targeting like the B2B side more, I would find an image of people happily using the products. Like, can you find an image of like a full arcade with like kids playing shit and looking like they're having fun? Or can you find some, you know, middle-aged adults like playing one in a workplace or something like that? That's kind of what I'd be going for, because that's what the B2B person's interested in, is in a lot of people using their shit, because that means they're making a lot of money. So always, yeah, think really carefully about who is the customer. So you want to think about who's my customer avatar, you know, and who am I trying to attract to the business, and then like position the business to them. But remember, if you've got B2B and B2C, always go for the B2B option, because that will still work for the B2C option, right? Always do that. If you're just B2C, then you don't have to worry about that. Aim for whoever you're, and even if you're just B2C, you may have multiple avatars within that. So go with that. Moving on down the page, we see we've got the some USP stuff here. So free shipping across the US. We've got the customer service line, easy returns. Don't like it, send it back. Price match, found a better price, we'll beat it. That's cool. I might tie it at the top of the site we saw up here for a special pricing, please call the phone number. And that's fine. I might, you know, I might kind of match it a bit more towards this, the language. I'd probably say for the best price, please call da 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 da. I don't think that's a bad thing, right? For a brand new business, one of the things you really want to do is get people calling you. Because the more that people call you, the more you learn about your business, the more sales you'll close, and the more you'll learn more about your market as well. So are your customers seeing other people offering the same products in a better way? Does somebody have a better offer than you? And you're not seeing that, but your customers are seeing that. You can just learn so much in the beginning that you should really be trying to get people to call your business. And you should be taking those calls and asking customers something in return. Like if somebody calls up and they're like, oh, hey, I'm looking at this machine, blah, 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 and I had a question about it. Yeah, answer their question, of course. And then ask them some questions like, is there any reason you wouldn't buy from us today? Are you thinking about buying a machine like this from anyone else? Oh, yeah, great. Who is that? What attracted you to them? You know, ask some questions. You should always ask every customer that calls you some questions. There's nothing wrong with that. And you're going to learn so much more than if you just sit and try and work it out yourself, right? Because the second you become a business owner, you don't look at anything the same way as a customer in your niche. It's really hard, right? You're instantly biased. You're biased about your website. You're biased about your competition. And you're looking at at your market with an insider's perspective, whereas your customers look at your market with an outsider's perspective. And they're different, and it's really hard to be both at the same time, right? And so learning from your customers negates your bias, right? Now, if you're a closed-minded person, which you need to fix, you might not be ready to hear what your customers have to tell you, and that's another thing again, but it gets you the experience of that insider bias, outsider bias. You get that. But I mean, this stuff's fine as a starting point. I understand this business is pretty early on. Over time, you know, you might nuance some of these things, but the price match, you know, tying that to calling us, it is a good way at the end of the day to get people to call you. Like, you don't want to get in the habit of discounting all the time and that sort of thing, but sometimes if you want to generate phone calls, getting people to, like, tying it to price is a really good way to start generating phone calls. It works, right? You might not do it forever, but it does work. So moving along, we got some collection stuff here. So a little bit here on this collection. This image has a watermark on it, and I believe this is on the product page for this product as well. So I might talk about this when we get to product pages, but seeing that watermark, which I believe is the manufacturer's watermark probably, you need to remove that. So that's actually, if you're running Google Shopping app, well, one, it just doesn't look good, but like, two, Google's advertising policies, and if you're using Google Shopping ads, state that you can't have watermarks on products. Now, I know some people do it and some people get away with it for a little while, but sooner or later, the product's going to get suspended or your merchant center is going to get suspended. So just a simple editing tool like Canva, or you can pay somebody to do it online, you can just edit that out very simply. Even if you just cut along the line there and edit out the bit that's on the white background, there's a tiny bit that's on the product, you can barely see it, right? You got to take that out. Also, these images aren't the same size. So once again, just setting up your website stuff, resize all of your images to the same dimensions. That's really important. It just makes your website look good. Small things, but small things add up. So those are some of the things I'd work on. Moving down, we can see that Jamie is obviously a veteran, and says veteran owned and operated. So in the US, this is a good thing to put on your site. If it's a thing for you, if you've served and or still serving, even of course, you know, this is something that does carry weight with a lot of people in the US. Probably less so outside of the US, to be honest, in my experience. It's not necessarily something I would lean too much on in some other countries where you could do high ticket drop shipping, but certainly in the US, this does carry a lot of weight. Yeah, you know, that's cool. I got nothing against that. So definitely having it on here is good. I think I would be, so there's kind of like a bit of a message: help support our mission to give back to those who have already given something. That's cool. You got a mission. You're doing something, presumably. We can click on this button here to see the mission statement, which takes us here. And now this is cool to have this once again. And get down to this point. At Arcade King, we believe in giving back. A portion of our profit goes towards supporting veterans' causes, ensuring that those who have served our country continue to receive the support they deserve. Once again, this is a really cool thing. Like, from a marketing perspective in the US, this is a cool thing. And if you're doing it, you should talk about it on your site. You should talk about it widely on your site as well, because a lot of people do care about that. And so if you do that and one of your customers is somebody who cares about that, and your competitors don't do that, then, or can't do that, they can't say they're veteran owned because they're not, then yeah, sure. For some customers, this may be a selling point for you. I would probably also, I'd talk about it up here in your USP bar. You know, I might even take out the phone number one and put in veteran owned and operated here or something like that. I mean, it's going to be a point of difference between you and some of your competitors. And I think that's an okay thing to make it more obvious. But what I would say is you have to be careful around this statement. So there can be a level of skepticism about this. And in fact, you can get into, I'm not saying Jamie specifically with this website, but it is possible to get into some hot water with this. There's been a number of instances over time of businesses who promise to be giving back a portion of their profits to causes, whether it's charity or donations to something or health things or whatever. And they say they've been taking money to do that and they never do it. If you've been around, you've probably have heard of stories like this. It does happen, unfortunately, but there are also a much larger group of businesses who do something like this and actually do it, of course. And you only hear about the bad ones. You don't really hear about the good ones ever. So to make this really effective from a marketing perspective, and in fact, just in general, in the general perspective of actually doing it, I would suggest that you need to be as specific as you possibly can about it. And then you need to, at some point, provide evidence that you're doing it, right? So which specific veterans cause are you going to be giving a portion of your profit to? What is the portion of your profit? And I would like pick a veterans cause. I mean, I'm sure there's tons out there. You could pick more than one, even. You could have two or three if you wanted to. Some of those, if you are a supporter of theirs, they're actually going to give you marketing material in return. They'll give you a badge thing that you can put on your website, for example. So, you know, if there's a particular veterans cause that's near and dear to your heart, either because of how and where you served or whatever, go with that. But it's going to be more effective from a marketing perspective if people can actually know what it is you're doing, who you're doing it with, and all of that sort of thing. The which organization you're doing it with is not going to make a difference in terms of whether customers buy for you or not. It's more in terms of your believability. And believability is very important when you make, this is essentially a marketing claim. That's what we would class it as. And so you have to have believability if you're making marketing claims. And so the more specific you can be, the better, the more effective it's going to be. But then it also allows you in the future, like, you know, when you're right at the beginning of the business, sure, you're not making that many sales. And so the portion of your profit that's going to that cause is not going to be very big. It's not going to be something to get super excited about. But when you're down the track and you're doing 100,000 in sales a month, you're doing 300,000 in sales a month, you're doing $500,000 in sales a month, which is all possible with one of these businesses, that portion of your profit that you're putting back to that cause or causes that you support is going to be something to talk about. And you can go and do things where you go into that organization and make some content of yourself and, you know, maybe do the thing where you're handing them a big check every month or something like that, saying this is specifically what we're giving back. This is what we're doing. Here's the outcomes that our profit donations are providing for veterans. And you can actually put that on your website as well, right? And that increases the believability through the roof around these sort of things and really makes it's a powerful marketing thing, but not just a powerful marketing thing. When you have the specificity, it makes it impossible for people to question whether you're actually doing it. So some people will be skeptical about this. They'll be like, oh, are they really doing that? You know, when you've got the specifics, it's very hard to be skeptical about whether you're actually doing it or not. And then when you add in the actual evidence down the track, when you have done it, or even if you're already doing it, you can add in that evidence. You know, it becomes very, very believable. So keep that in mind. And that goes for not just things related to veterans or the military. You know, a lot of people choose all sorts of causes that they are personally interested in, whether it's, like I say, charities, you know, maybe it's, you know, donating money every month to build a well in, you know, countries that don't have access to running water, whatever it might be. If you're making a claim on your website that you're supporting that thing, you need to be specific about it, exactly what it is, exactly how much you're giving from each order. You know, in the beginning, you might kind of guess at that. You might say, well, it's, you know, it's 1% of, you know, whatever, or, you know, 10% of our profit, or, you know, 5% of our revenue, like whatever you want to break it up. In the beginning, you might just pull that number out of thin air because you don't know exactly how that's going to work out. You can change that number over time, right? It doesn't have to be correct. But if you say you're going to do it, you got to do it, obviously. So this is very important. But look, this is great. I like it. I might put a bit more detail on the homepage about it in this section. You've got enough room for a bit more text. You know, like I say, if you pick some causes that you directly are going to support, like organizations, other organizations, you can say you're a partner of theirs, right? You'll have something you can put on your website from them, most likely, to show that you're supporting them. And I would put that on there. I would add that in as well. So that's cool. Now I got a little sale bar, which is great. Can't find what you're looking for. And then a repeat of the USP down the bottom. Search bar, that's all good. Footer. Yeah, I mean, the footer's fine. You got your phone number, email, all the relevant sort of links that you would want to have down here. So yeah, that's cool. I mean, you could, until you've got some sort of social media out here, you could probably knock this out, like take this column out of your footer. I'm never a fan of having like a heading and then like a blank column. I think it's better. Like, it's like having empty collection pages on your site because you haven't got any products to go in them yet, or you haven't uploaded the products. It's usually not a good idea to include that. So I would just take it off. You know, when you open up like a Facebook page or an Instagram or whatever it is you're going to do at some point, then put it in there. And I think sometimes as well, you know, particularly in the instance where now Google has this for Google Shopping and Merchant Center, they have this website needs improvements thing, which is a fairly a newer one that they're pushing, which is completely AI driven, at least in the first instances. Having blank sections, you know, I can see being one of the things that would potentially trip that warning for the AI systems who can't yet really apply human thinking to it. And realization of why that might be blank or whatever, and that it doesn't really matter. They just flag you when it looks like something's not quite right. And then you have to work backwards from there to get it fixed, which is a pain in the neck at the moment. So kind of, I'd be cutting that out. So that's the homepage. Let's have a bit of a play around. I think, you know, looking at, we'll get in and look at some collection pages. Not a lot of products on the site at the moment, which is okay. I mean, some sites don't have a lot of products. Usually for high ticket dropshipping businesses, you're going to have a lot more products over time. And so collection pages, you know, really, you know, when you've not got many products on them, like say this one, we've got like three products, you don't have to think too much about the customer experience here. You know, things like building a lot of filters and ways that customers can navigate the collection, which you might have heard me talk about before. I talk about this a lot. Probably not so important when there's only three products, because I mean, it's not hard for me to look at these products and consider them. But, you know, if it's 30, 40, 50 different redemption machines, then it becomes hard for customers to kind of work out, like, what's the difference between this one and this one and this one and the other 40 on here, other than price, which is obvious. And so when you get to that stage, you have to think a bit about maybe more about filters or, you know, other bits of content on the page that can send people to the right thing. Now, content on the page is important for SEO, but from the customer experience on this sort of collection, and I think most of the others on the site at this point, not a massive one. But once again, like, the product images here need to be optimized. I think it just doesn't look good when one's this big and this one's this big. I think it just looks more, once again, professional and sorted, and particularly given, think about competitors, like people you might be competing against. If their websites are all nice and neat and tidy, and like, you know, things are on, like if your product sizes are all the image sizes are all the same, then all your text appears in one line across the page. It's just doesn't matter so much for mobile, sure, because people are going to see it all as one, you know, one column. But for a desktop, it matters. And you're probably, once again, if you're targeting B2B customers, you're going to find you get a little bit more action on desktop than you currently do with B2C customers. So once again, another consideration, somebody's at work and they're purchasing, they're probably, particularly in a larger organization, more likely to be at a desk with a computer, and they're going to be looking on there. Because it's their job to do so they're allowed to, Whereas if somebody who's on the B2C side is at work, they might not have it on their computer screen where everyone else can see it. They might be down there on the mobile phone looking at stuff, right? So you gotta think about that as well. So I just like to keep it clean. Resize your images when you get, before you upload them. You've got to do other stuff to images for SEO before you upload them, change the file name, compress it, all of that sort of thing. So you want to do it. You might as well do it. You've got to do it somehow at some time. And so I'd be working on that. So going back, so I'm not going to say too much about the collection pages on this particular site because, I guess Jamie hasn't got to the SEO side of things so much yet, which is, you're going to build content onto these sites, onto these pages so that you can try and rank them, because some of these pages are going to be, there's going to be keywords that you want to rank a collection page for. Absolutely. And collection pages do a lot of the heavy lifting for your SEO strategy as you go. But I won't dissect that at this point because that sort of content just isn't there yet. But it's going to have to be there at some point. So let's jump into product pages, which for a business that's a bit earlier on are very important. So product pages, all right. So thinking about your product pages, when people land on product pages, they're thinking about, they've got two questions to essentially answer. They've got the question of, is this the right product for me? And they've got the question of, is this the right business to buy it from? So you're a reseller when you're dropshipping, when you're high ticket dropshipping. You're a reseller, which means you're reselling a manufacturer's products, or you're a retailer, whatever you want. They're not your products, right? And so it's quite possible that a customer is going to be comparing the product that's on your site with somebody else. So if I'm interested in this product I've got on the screen, it's got a nice branded name, Dynamo, Firestorm, Air Hockey, Valley Dynamo. I don't know what the brand name is exactly here. Whatever it is, it's very easy for me, if I'm looking at it on your site, to copy, open up a Google window, paste this title, and I'm going to see other websites, either on Google Shopping or in the Google search results, where I can compare price, or I can compare anything else that's on the page. And this is what customers will do. Some customers will just buy from you without looking at anything else. That can happen for sure. But a lot don't these days. People know how to compare prices, how to compare offers, how to compare shipping arrangements, all that sort of stuff. And they're going to do that. So part of the question they're asking is not just, is this the right product for me? It's, is this the right place for me to buy this product? And so on your product page, which is ultimately where the final decision to purchase is made, really, you have to be answering both of those questions, right? And so that's one of the things I think that I would be working on this site is, and once again, might just be something that Jamie hasn't got around to yet, but I would certainly be thinking about getting some representation of the why should people buy from you onto your product page. So if we think back to our homepage, we've got things like free shipping, easy returns, price match. We've got, your veteran owned and operated thing, which, as I said, is a cool thing to find some way to represent that. So going back to the product page, a lot of people are going to come. This is the main area down to around here. Right? This is what 100% of people who land on this page are going to look at. Very few people are going to get down to the bottom, right? Now, I know you've probably got this why buy from us thing here, which is fine. Some people will look at that, but it's in a tab. So some people won't as well. It's fine to have it there, absolutely, because different people will consume information in different ways. But when you think about the really important information that you really want people to get across for you, your selling point is not going to be the product because it's not your product. You can't say, in most cases when you're high ticket dropshipping, this is the only place you can buy this product, right? You have to buy it from us. You can't get it anywhere else. That's usually not the case. And so you need to be really clear, you know, once again, you want to echo. So most people will insert stuff either in this area that you find under the add to cart buttons, or some people will push, and what I'm talking about is it's a little bit of coding to do this. I mean, or you can use meta fields. There's various ways you can do this these days on Shopify, or they'll insert some stuff around the price, like some little tick boxes with the expressions of their, or some sort of dot point system with expressions of their USP. Like, what are the 3 to 5 reasons that people should buy from you? And then there's other things you can do. Like, you can put in some little information up here about when the product's going to ship, what are your average shipping times, you know, all of that sort of thing. So I think the next stage and you have to do this on high ticket dropshipping businesses. So once again, if you're listening and you've got something that looks similar to this site and you're kind of just got the product on the product page and you're not really talking about why people should buy from your business and you're not making as many sales as you would like, start fixing it, right? Start. This is the next step. If you're in our course Dropship Breakthrough, we have a whole module kind of dedicated to working this stuff out. It's the third module in our conversion rate optimization in the growth phase of our program. And if you want to get into Dropship Breakthrough, dropshipbreakthrough.com/join, or you can get into our launch program, dropshipbreakthrough.com/launch. And we're going to teach you, watch over my shoulder, do all of this step by step and how to work out what the things that you put on the page should be. But in a nutshell, what you put on your page, like what you say about your business, that's your offer. Like the why people should buy from you. When I talk about offers, some people think I'm talking about discounts or something like that. That's not a discount, could be part of your offer. You know, you could see here that we're saying save $805. So this has the appearance of saying that that's part of your offer, is that you're saving $805. But your offer is your price. It's the product. It's your shipping. It's your returns policy. It's your customer service. It's your veterans owned and operated thing, right? If you wanted to include that, it's any other additional value you're providing with the product. Are you giving away a free gift with the product? Do you give them access to some information with the product that they don't get elsewhere? Like, there's so many different ways you could do that, but that all of those things combined is what's your offer. And so your offer is the one of the biggest reasons why people are buying this product from you, when they can probably buy it elsewhere. So you want to be communicating that. You've got to shout your offer from the rooftops, basically. You want to slap people in the face with it, right? When you're marketing, you have to assume that everyone's an idiot, right? And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I just mean that in the sense that when people interact online or behave online, it's kind of like their IQ is a bit lower than it is in real life. Right? You really have to yell things at people. The things that you absolutely want every person to understand has to be big. It has to be bold. They have to see it. They have to notice it. People's attention spans online on average are like less than 10 seconds, they reckon, these days. So that information, that the core information that people have to grab, that you want them to grab, or at least to hook them in to say, oh, yeah, this is interesting. This is different. I need to pay more attention here than I do to other businesses, right? Now, when we talk about hooking people in, we obviously have to be truthful in doing that. Like, we can't hook people in by saying something that's not actually going to happen. But the more you can hook people into your page, the more attention you're going to hold. And the business in any market that gets the most attention is the one that makes the most sales. Right, attention equals money in marketing. And so think about that. Jamie, whatever you want your offer to be for this website, I'd be getting it in here. That's kind of like your next stage of boosting up your things. I mentioned this watermark. You want to get rid of that. That's no good. Moving down the page, I did note on some of these products, and this may just be a brand thing or one of the suppliers or something, a lot of the product images aren't particularly good quality either. I'm just trying to remember which one I was looking at. There was one I was looking at and it was just kind of like crazy town bad. I think some of them are too large as well. So like this image, for example, it's too large and it's kind of degrading the quality, and it doesn't need to be that big. You could probably, I mean, it's not going to be quite so big on mobile, but I think it might be in a rectangular orientation. So what it will do, a rectangular image when it gets put into a column, is it will push everything below it down more. So you always want to try and get your images sized to a square. There's a reason for that, because a square won't really push columns down. But also in this theme, Superstore theme, from Out of the Sandbox, which is the theme that we recommend, we use, best one for high ticket drop shipping. There is a setting where you can make these images take up less of the page. It kind of feels like you might have that on large at the moment. You could probably turn that down a little bit too. You don't want that. You want them to be good, but not too good. And I'm trying to get back to, I saw some images that I was like, so you see this image here. I mean, once again, it might be because I'm on a larger screen, but this image on this product, it's quite blurry. There's quite a bit of blur to it. Now that might be because of the quality of the original image you got from the supplier. But you want to try and see if there's a way that you can get around that. Like, can you find other images? Can you get better images from the supplier? Because it's going to be hard, or it's going to be easier if you get better images somehow. You know, even at some point, if you're like, hey, supplier, can I come to your warehouse and take some images of my own? Right? They might have the product set up there where you can just take pictures of them. I mean, I've done that before. Suppliers will often let you do something like that. And then you've got unique images that are copyrighted. They're under your copyright. You own the image, right? So you're going to have different imagery on your website as well. So moving on down the product page, you know, just looking now at the sort of description field, I would assume this is a product that hasn't had any work done to it from a description perspective. Obviously, this is too little, right? I mean, this is zero help whatsoever. It's probably a supplier description. And in the beginning, you might launch your site just with the supplier descriptions. That's cool, but you've got to get back. I mean, you wouldn't expect to sell this product very often with a description like that. I mean, this really just isn't telling the customer anything. There is no, like, for starters, if I'm buying this, I want to know how big it is. Right? I mean, this is going to be a big product. I want to know how heavy it is, because it's going to be a pretty heavy product too. So I'm going to have questions about shipping. If I'm a customer, I 100% I'm going to have, how is this going to ship? Does it ship like this? Is there any installation required? Is there any setup? Are the legs on it? Is, you know, how does this top bit come? Like, what's the story? Can I set it up myself? B2B or B2C, they're going to have these questions. And so you need to be, your description area needs to answer those questions. If you hook somebody into this page with your offer and you know what the site looks like and all that sort of thing, they stop here and they're like, yeah, okay, this looks like something I need to pay attention to. The next thing they're going to do is they're going to scroll down further and look to learn more. And then they're going to get down here and they're going, oh, wow, this isn't really telling me anything. Like, what's good about this? Why is this air hockey table different to other air hockey tables? What does it do? What's great about it? You know, so these are the things that your descriptions need to talk about. And so the other thing with these as well is, once again, and this is more of an anecdotal thing rather than a hard data thing, but you certainly am getting the sense, once again, for Google Merchant Center particularly, that they don't like really, really short product descriptions. I think they're starting to view that as a low kind of usability thing, which leads to that website needs improvement suspension reason. So I don't have hard data on that, and they haven't said that explicitly. However, I have heard from a few people who have interacted with Google in that situation that that was potentially an issue that got thrown back at them, was, oh, you didn't have a description, or your description was really short and it didn't really provide any useful information about the product. And so I'd kind of have a think about that. I just come back to the title on this one as well. So this is, once again, I'm probably a bit confused here, but I would assume that, you know, you talk about the brand as Dynamo elsewhere on the site, but this has the model number and then Valley and then Dynamo and then Firestorm Air Hockey. So I don't know if it's Valley Dynamo is the brand or just Dynamo. I would put the model number at the end of or not at all. I think for this product, you're probably more likely to get people who are searching like for the, so once again, I'm talking about in relation to Google Shopping and possibly SEO, but primarily Google Shopping, where you're trying to get your ad showing for people who are searching for the brand name and or the model name. You're probably going to get, because this has a really clear model name, Firestorm, for people who have heard of this product and might be looking to buy it, they're probably more often going to search Dynamo Firestorm than Dynamo MS0426, right? This is very memorable, and it says it on the product as well, whereas this is less memorable. So unless you have data to suggest otherwise from your Google Shopping, I would probably be structuring. I don't know what the word Valley is about, but I would have the brand name first and then the model name, air hockey table. So once again, it's an air hockey table. It's not an air hockey. So you need the word table. And then I might include this in the title, but I might not as well. I might talk about that. I might have that down in the product description. And as you optimize your product description and your product description fields for SEO and that sort of thing, and for Google Shopping, what you're going to do is when you fill this out more, you're going to start this section with a H2 tagged heading about the product. And you're going to use that as an opportunity to hit some of the other keywords around the product. And that's going to be one of them. So I would probably myself, because you're only going to get so much of your title into like Google Shopping ads. So for Google Shopping ads, the primary ranking factor in terms of how Google matches your page, your product to search terms is the title, and it's left to right in order of importance of terms, right? So at the moment, this is the most important term. Now, if that's not what most customers search for when they search for this product, then that's not going to be helping you, right? Whereas, and the second most important thing is the description, the first paragraph or two of the description. So if you've got a heading in there as well, that's going to help. So I would probably go Dynamo Firestorm Air Hockey Table. That'd be it. And then I'd have a H2 heading down here that was like, Dynamo MS0426 Air Hockey Table. You know, so I'm hitting the secondary keyword in a H2 heading, which will be good for SEO, but also for Google Shopping. So shipping, the only thing I would say in this tab, the why buy from us, I mean, yeah, that's cool. Shipping is free on all orders to customers within the United States. We don't want to mess around with 5% extra charges. We like to make things to be simple and easy. That's fine. On product pages, so people ask, like if we go here, there's obviously a much longer shipping policy, capital S, you should capital S this. And that's fine. And this is probably actually going to get larger over time as well, because as you get more and more into your business, you'll find people have common shipping questions as well. And you should start including those in your shipping, like, you know, how often, like you'll get more idea about like what are your shipping timeframes, how long does it take for an order to get out from when it's ordered, how long does it generally take to get to customers. You know, a lot of these products are large products, so you know they might be going on a particular type of shipping. You might introduce some sort of white glove service, which you're going to talk about in your shipping policy. So you don't need to put the full shipping policy on the product page, like if you're using tabs in the tab. Now, I agree with that, right? Most people are just going to want to know the hit points of the shipping policy. How much is it? How long is it going to take? How is it shipping? Those are the three things people generally want to know. Most people will be satisfied with that. Some people, however, want to read more. So we want to make it easy for them. You want to link to your shipping policy in here. All right. So like I'd put an extra line in, read our full shipping policy here. Hyperlink to that. I would also be talking about returns on here as well. Like returns aren't mentioned at all. You're saying easy returns on the homepage in big stuff, but I'm not seeing it here. So you want to do the same thing for returns. You know, because if that's going to be a selling point, you really want people to understand what exactly is the benefit I'm getting or potentially how am I protected? How are you risk reversaling me? And you want to have that quite obviously here. So, I mean, this all needs a little bit, more work down there. You know, related products is fine down here. If I was selling a lot to business as well, I would be having a think about putting together. So if B2B was going to be your thing in this space, or this B2B is your thing in this space, I'd be even thinking about putting together some bundles, right? So like you could have an arcade starter bundle, you know, like if most arcades have an air hockey table and a foosball table, why wouldn't you try and, you should try and sell both at the same time. There's another watermark there. That one needs to go. I would be trying to sell, here's a bundle where we'll give you a foosball table and an air hockey table and something else. Maybe there's some other, claw machines or snack machines or something like that. So if you're targeting B2B, I'd be thinking about like, what's your actual B2B package? Like what's your offer for B2B customers, right? So somebody potentially is coming in here and they're looking at setting up a business or setting up a games room in their business of some sort for kids because they serve kids. Maybe they're like a baseball stadium or a football stadium and they have entertainment rooms for kids in them. Like these could be your customers. And so they're going to want, expect a different treatment to just Joe Bag of Donuts as, I'm saying American sayings now. Ben says it so much. As Joe Bag of Donuts who's setting up a man cave, right? They're going to be spending wildly different amounts of money on these things. And so like commercial customers want to know, like, what do you do for commercial customers, right? What do you do for us? It's different to what you do from everybody else. And so you want to, communicate that on yourself. So I would have a page that explains my commercial trade, like my trade program or whatever. And once again, if that was going to be your primary customer, I would be making that part of my USP as well. Do you have volume-based pricing? Do you put together custom bundles? What's your quoting process? Like these are all questions that a business is going to have and you want to answer them on your website. I mean, yes, of course they can call you to get a quote or whatever, but you want to talk about these things on your website because once again, that's going to hook those people in more. And you can certainly get some guidance on that from what other people in your market might already do if you've got much competition. Once again, this product page, not enough information in the description at all. You need dimensions on this, man. Like how big is this foosball table? Once again, like how does it ship? What state does it ship in, et cetera? Like, I mean, I would almost certainly say that this is going to ship without the legs on it, for example, simply because all the ones I sell ship without legs on them. And so you want to talk to your customer about that. Is that easy to put the legs on? Can they do it themselves? Are they going to need people to help them lift it? Like these are all questions you want to think about and find out answers to and help your customer with. So yeah, some cool stuff there. That's probably what I'd be doing on this product page. I think the next stage for the product pages here is to get that USP in there, work on those, work on descriptions. And that's definitely, where I'd be heading there. And think about like, you know, you want to think about like, how can I sell multiple things? Even the B2C side of this, I can certainly think of times where I've sold multiple of these products to an individual, less frequently than you would to a business. But I mean, are there bundles that make sense? Like, could you have like a man cave bundle where they get a foosball table and they get a pool table and maybe they just get one of these kind of like, tabletop video game, multi game things. you know, another tip I'd probably say with these, like, I mean, these have multiple games on them. These ones, looking at this product description as well, you need to go through and change your TMs to the actual TM symbol. It'll make more sense if you do that. But this has got a bunch of games on it. Actually, not as many as you sometimes get with these, but how many games is that? I don't know. It's probably like 30 games or something. You should say, you know, like, this product title, once again, is not good. Like, wood grain cocktail home. Like, oh, I don't want, is that a cocktail? Am I going to get a drink here? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So, once again, for ranking sakes, whether it's in Google Shopping or anywhere else, I mean, yeah, you've got this thing up here. But I would be more like, you know, just Namco, Pac-Man. I mean, you could do Pac-Man's Pixel Bash, tabletop cocktail machine. You probably in the US, I'm thinking about what we call them in Australia. It might be a little bit different, but this style of machine has its own name. Cocktail is right. Sometimes people call them tabletop cocktail machines. Or you would call it Pac-Man's Pixel Bash Cocktail Arcade Machine, right? It's an arcade machine, like, it's a machine. So the product title is just not right. Once again, I probably wouldn't include that up here. And I probably wouldn't include Bandai Namco just because it's going to get a bit long. I'd probably just go with Namco by itself. But anyway... lots of cool things here, room for improvement for people to think about, lots of things to think about here. Good start. I actually quite like this niche. Like I say, I mean, it's worked. I don't sell all of these things, but I sell some of them and they work pretty well. People buy them. people buy them online as well. I think really just... So it's a good place. The other thing I would say as well is, I mean, you just need more products. Like, you know, particularly in the US, there's going to be, and, you know, this might be something, Jamie, obviously you're working on. I'm not going to presume to know the answer, but definitely you need a lot more products. There are a lot more products out there. And so for anybody who's got a high ticket dropshipping business and you're at the start of the process, you really want to get as many supplies and products. Like, yep, you get enough to launch your business so you can start, you know, talking to some customers, making some sales ideally, and just get that whole piece, get all your marketing, start to get that set up. I mean, I think it's a good idea to, launch with a smaller number of suppliers just so you can start doing some of those things, but don't stop trying to get more suppliers. You know, when you're high ticket drop shipping, one of your superpowers is that you can have as many products in your niche on your site. You can have any number and it doesn't cost you relatively any more or less, right? You don't have to put all those products in a warehouse. You don't have the same overhead of selling more products than a traditional retailer does. You don't have product displays, like physical product displays to pay for or anything like that. That's one of your superpowers. So you really, really have to use your superpowers because there are some downsides to dropshipping as well, right? You don't get the same margins as somebody who buys a ton of stock and invests a lot of money on that side, right? So you have to lean on your superpowers to offset your not superpowers or your negative powers, right? And so getting as many products that exist in your niche, as many brands, as many suppliers, as many products as you can is a very, very important thing. And so you really want to focus on doing that. I can't remember off for a second there. So I'm going to say there's some people on here still. Thank you for hanging out for this time. Any questions? Does anybody have any questions? If you have questions, if you've been watching in here, post them in the comments. Post the comment. I'm happy to answer any questions. I've got a bit of time here. If nobody has any questions, we'll be wrapping up in a second. So start posting there. I'm going to say once again, thank you to Jamie for volunteering his site. I hope you got something useful out of that. I think you're on the right track, just got work to do. The work never ends, so that's okay. That's not a problem. And as I said at the start, if you'd like to volunteer your site or any aspect of your business, I've done these on these sort of teardowns on Google Ads accounts before to help people get their Google Ads accounts in place properly. You know, then you might want me to do some sort of SEO related teardown of things you're doing on your site, content or whatever it is. Just send me a message or send an email into support@dropshipbreakthrough.com and say you'd love John to do this. You're on Facebook now. You can DM me on Facebook here. Whatever. I don't mind. I'd love to do more of these, of course. So please feel free to hit me up. Okay. So we've got some questions coming in here. Ewan. Hello, Ewan. Thank you for joining. Asks, what are the pros and cons of making a new limited company for every site or making multiple sites under the same company name? Pros and cons. Well, you can do it either way, is what I would say about that. You can have multiple sites operating under the same company, or you can open a new company for each site. I guess, you know, I'm not really going to, like, there's various levels to this. There's the selling the business level. There's just the general accounting level. And then there's the legal level. So I'm not going to spend too much on the legal the legal level, because I don't know anybody in 10 years of high ticket dropshipping who's ever had successful legal action brought against them. So I think that, generally speaking, is a fairly much a non-issue for me, unless you're intentionally doing something really wrong, in which case you deserve to get spanked as hard as they spank you. You're not really going to get in any trouble. That's not going to be a factor. Technically speaking, though, if you had each business in its own company, they are legally separate from each other and they're protected from each other, right? So if something legally went wrong in one, it's not going to take down the rest. Whereas if something legally goes wrong in a company that holds multiple websites, potentially it could affect the ability of them all to operate, potentially. Like I said, that's not a big thing. From an accounting perspective, once again, there might be some taxation-related matters here. So depending on what country you're in, you may want to get the advice of an accountant on that. There may be slight nuances there based on different countries or benefits to you individually. So once again, I'm not an accountant and I can't, you know, I'm not providing financial advice, but there might be something there. I think it's possibly a little bit cleaner as well. You know, from a selling perspective, I think it's probably more important. I think it looks better if you're thinking of selling those sites, if they're kind of housed very separately, like all the accounting separate, all the books are separate, all the structures are separate, and you sell the company, right? Whereas when they're under one, I think sometimes people will be, it's more possible to tangle them together in various ways, which can make it a little bit harder or a little bit less attractive to people who buy websites when that's the case. Particularly people who buy websites at higher numbers. So if you build successful businesses and you're getting into the stage where you might sell to people who are more like investors, who know their shit probably better than you do, and they look at something that looks like a tangled up mix of businesses, they're just going to be like, nah, I'm out. That's just too much. I don't even care. I don't need this action. And that looks too hard. Like, they'll just be straight out. If there's even a hint that there's anything wrong with the books, they're probably going to be like, either I'm just out because I'm not even going to bother dealing with that. There's 10 billion other businesses for sale that I can go and look at. Or they're going to knock down your multiplier really hard. They're going to say, yeah, all right, I'm interested, but I'm interested at this price. And that happens when you sell a business anyway. There is always price negotiation. You never rarely get the exact number you ask for. right? There is always negotiation. So you don't want to give people as any points to potentially negotiate you down, right? So those are some things to think about. But like I say, in terms of how successful your businesses can be and all that sort of thing, it makes no difference, I don't think, whether they're in one company or individual companies each, no difference at all. That's not why your customers buy from you. All right, Jason. Hello, Jason. Jason asks, do you recommend trust badges on the product pages? Look, I mean, it's an interesting question. I don't these days so much. I mean, it probably possibly depends what the trust badges are. So, it was common practice when I started 10 years ago, now this year, to have trust badges. So we actually didn't used to do as much of the USP stuff, which was a mistake. And it was because the people who kind of talked about this business model were pretty average, to be honest. Some of those people still talk about it and they're still pretty average. People would just stick like payment icons down here, like these sort of, you know, these things like the Apple, the MasterCard, used to be MasterCard, Amex, PayPal, Visa, and sometimes you do Discover as well. We didn't have any of the Apple Pays and the Google Pays of the world at that point. So we'd put them down there because at one point, actually, not every website did take every card, right? That was probably even longer than 10 years ago. And so saying that you accepted all available methods of payment actually was kind of a cool thing at one point. That's not the case today. So certainly, like, nobody doesn't accept Visa on websites. Like, that's not a thing, right? I mean, if you actually don't, like, what are you doing? But so that's a non-event. So payment icons, no, never have that anymore. That's just a waste of space. It's a waste of space. You've got limited space here. Don't waste it. Now, there's other trust badges. Like, you know, you could have like Trustpilot or the Better Business Bureau, something like that. And I think those can be good to have if you have that. I mean, once again, if you've built up, got some reviews on places on those third party kind of sites, customers do look at that, sure. And for some customers that like they're interested in that, once again, there's probably more of those in the US. So if you've got a US business, that's probably more important. So in some instances, yes, they can be okay to sort of provide that proof that your business is okay. But there are some, the customers, it has to be one that the customer's heard of too. Like there are some trust badges out there from some organizations that like check your website. Like I see them and I'm like, I don't even know what company that is. Like why do I care? If it's like Better Business Bureau in the US, for example, it's a very well-known thing amongst customers. So they recognize that BBB thing, right? And so that can have an effect. But if it's not something that customers, like some weird tech company that nobody recognizes, like who gives a shit? It's not going to have any effect. So don't waste space with it. All right, next question from, I can't see the name on this one, so you'll have to. It's Christina. Thank you for joining, Christina. Do we normally need to include brand name in a product name and where should it go? I see some websites always put it at the very end after a dash. All right. So I'll go back to, I actually did touch on this briefly. I'll touch on it again though, because it's pretty easy. Because there was a product on Jamie's site here that I could definitely do it on. So this product here, Dynamo Firestorm Air Hockey Table, it should say, and this is the model number. So I said I would change this a little bit. Yes, when you're high ticket dropshipping, I would include the brand name in your product titles, unless you're in a market where brands aren't really a thing. So God forbid you're selling homewares, you're not going to have much branding in there. God forbid you're selling lights, which I used to sell. There is no branding in that space. Customers don't search by brand. And so I learned at some point that there was just no point in having it there. And I changed my descriptions and didn't really have the brand so much. or I didn't feature it. Remember, Google reads it left to right like you do, and they place keyword importance starting at the left. So the most important keyword is always going to be at the left in a descending order. So you have to think about a few things. If you're running Google Shopping ads, then that's going to be your primary ranking factor. So what do you want to rank for the most? You want to rank for, because Google Shopping is a bottom of channel, bottom of funnel channel, you want to rank for search terms that are bottom of funnel. So that's going to be people. And because people are going to be in the market who already are familiar with the brand and the product name, if they're identifiable, right? And so those are the things that you want to hit. Brand name, model name. If there's a model, now there's not always a model name. Not every product has a recognizable model name, but Firestorm is very recognizable, right? I mean, it's a fairly unique word. It's on the product as well. When people see this product, they see Firestorm. You can actually make that out a bit better than the brand name even. And so if people are looking to find this product online, they're going to probably search with Dynamo Firestorm, right? Now, the other factor, you only have so much space for your title, so you can't have 50,000 words up here. One, looks like shit on the product page. Two, it will get truncated in search results anyway, and people won't see the whole thing. So if I made a if this was like two, probably even if I just had Dynamo Firestorm air hockey table, and then I put this at the end, that would probably be too long. It's going to get truncated on mobile for sure. Nobody's really ever going to see the whole thing. It'd still be a ranking factor, but from what the customer sees, you want to see them to see the terms that they're actually searching. And so for Google Shopping, I'm spending most of my money trying to acquire people who are either searching for something like Dynamo Air Hockey Table or Dynamo Firestorm Air Hockey Table or Firestorm Air Hockey Table. So those words need to be at the start, Dynamo Firestorm. Then what type of product it is, and then something else if you need to have something else, right? As I said, you have a secondary opportunity to hit some of these keywords, and that's in your product description, because the second most important ranking factor is the product description for Google Shopping and for SEO for that matter. But I want to encourage you not to think too much about your products for SEO. Like product pages will rank for their product title. That's it. That's all. They're not ranking for any other broad terms or anything like that. So don't think about that. I would put a H2 heading in here that talks a little bit about the product and does a variation on the product title. So I would do something maybe down there like Dynamo MS0426 air hockey table, and then maybe like one of the great features or something like that. Make that a H2 heading. That's still going to carry some importance and help me to make sure that I'm ranking for the model number as well. Once again, unless I had very specific intel that told me that for this particular product, people do search that a lot. Usually they search model name over model number. There are exceptions to that. So always start running some ads. Look at your search term reports. What search terms are coming up more? Do you see more searches that include this or this? If I saw more of this, I would include the number over the model name in my title. I would weight more towards that. But when you're a reseller, you're in a branded niche, like customers are going to be searching for your brand names. So you want to include them in the title, and you want to include them at the start, not the end. Because for Google Shopping, we're not really trying to rank this for air hockey table by itself. That's not what we're looking to spend a lot of money on here. So that should be a bit of a guide, hopefully. Thank you for the question. Right. Jason asked a follow-up question. I believe you may have talked about this before, maybe a podcast. Do some products deserve a collection page on its own? And if so, why? I actually don't think we talked about that on a podcast that I can recall. Well, my answer would be no. I don't think so. Your collection pages are, for two reasons, they're to help customers navigate by product type or brand or some like mid-level product separator. So like if I come to this machine and I want to find air hockey tables, there's going to be a collection for those. Now you might have a collection that only has one product in it, sure. Like if I sold air hockey tables and I only have access to one air hockey table that I can supply, then that collection of air hockey tables at that time is going to have one product in it. That's cool. But I'm not going to create a collection page and give it the product name and then put that product that has the same product name in that collection page. No, that's not something I'll do. I don't see any reason to do that whatsoever. Because like, you know, why? What? That's not going to, it's not going to achieve anything. Essentially. Now, you might at times, there may be circumstances where you link directly to a product from your menu. Once again, there may be circumstances why you want to do that. Very rare, once again, that you would do that. But that's not creating a collection for it. That's just linking from the menu directly to the product page. So if you created a collection page of a product, that's just going to be a duplication of the product, essentially. So I can't really think, unless I'm missing something, I can't really think of a circumstance where that would be something that you would want to do. But thank you anyway, Jason, for the question. All righty, guys. Awesome. Well, thanks for jumping on. It was fun. I enjoyed doing that. Thanks for being here, and I'll be back next Wednesday with another live session of some description.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business. John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.